Hey everyone, just a quick note before we get going. A portion of today's program involves a discussion about swear words. No actual swear words are spoken, but we dance around a few of them. And if that's not something you'd like to hear today, then please just check back with us next week. Okay, here we go. From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is your Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about the words we use, when we use them, and the real power they can have. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, Kathy. Hey, Ross. It's springtime. How are your allergies?
Oof.
Mine are dreadful.
Yes.
Started about mid-February around here, I think. We had a terrible cold snap, and then everything got warm, and it's just, you know, it's already going.
Yeah.
Well, so far I'm okay.
Oh, lucky you. We had too much rain, so, I mean, for me, it's like, ugh. No, I'm not a happy girl.
You know, it's all enough for me that I just want someone to behead me. Just take that thing off.
Which leads very smoothly and coincidentally. This was a message from Marty.
Hi, Marty.
Who wrote us and said, I haven't listened to all of your episodes. Well, get on a stick, Marty. But anyway, so you may have already covered this. Why is it beheaded, not unheaded or deheaded? Are there other words that use be? In that episode, Fletcher said, this is sad, actually, Ross. This is an indictment of us.
I know.
Fletcher said, I was about to beheaded when Ross sort of interrupted. Both Kathy and Ross said they interrupted. I had the thought that beheading is this kind of interruption. That's sad. So, Marty.
Okay, well, the interesting thing is B does a lot of work. So B is the prefix B does a fair amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting a little bit old and creaky right now. We explain that. But in the case of beheading, it's called a privative prefix. In other words, it takes away what follows. The B says, okay, we're going to take away your head. So it's behead. Other times it does less bloodthirsty jobs, like in bewilder. Here the B prefix means thoroughly. And wilder means leading astray into the wilds. So therefore it means bewildering means leading you into the wilds. And then bespattering, here B means kind of like getting it all over the place, and in that case, that's what it means. To go on to that, why is it unheaded? It's probably a fad thing. And in the 1600s, B was a big thing. But beheaded goes back even earlier than that. And it could have been un, it could have been in, it could have been a lot of things. And there's no real way of knowing why is it B, not unheaded. It just, that's what happened.
Yeah.
English is capricious like all languages.
I just wanted to say, Ross, you had said before that B is a multitasker. So then I thought you could say it's busy as a beaver.
Oh, my God. Wow. Oh, Kathy, I'm getting out of here. Goodbye, everyone.
Sorry. I apologize. I do.
Is there another?
I should be beheaded.
I can't think of another. I'm sure there is one that's just not obvious to me. I can't think of another example of be meaning to take away.
That's really interesting, and it's a really annoying question because I can't think of one either. I can't quickly come out with one.
I can't either.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like one of those, I mean, probably the prefix used to mean that relatively frequently, and it kind of just hardened into just that one word that we kept.
Yeah, I can't think.
Bereave.
I don't know what reaving is.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking up here. They're saying other be privative, but they're not really at all.
No, like befog.
Little is making little. It's not. It's making little. It's diminishing. Behead is removing the head. Belittle doesn't remove little. It makes it worse. It makes it littler. Bedevil means you're giving devils.
Mm-hmm.
Befoul means
to foul. Yeah, foul up.
Foul up things. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, they say bereave to deprive, but the reave.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of are dethrone,
yeah.
Not B, D. In that case, the primitive is D and then disarm, which is D in effect. that uses the I can't think of any others. I think Fletcher, that
Nor
was a really
I.
interesting point. You're right.
Bejewel, begrudge, bespatter, besiege, yeah.
No.
And every time I see it referred to as privative, it's the only example is behead.
Wow.
Yeah. Interestingly. I'm the same thing, Kat.
Wow.
Mm. I'm the same thing.
So it's sort of just a fossilized version of that prefix.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Exactly.
Interesting. Wow. Thanks, Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually really good. Oh, they say it's privative and bemused because musing is to ponder. So
wow.
If you're bemused, you're puzzled. You're. But that's not exactly. I mean, maybe technically, your ability to muse has been taken away because you're so confused.
Because you're clouded.
I find that a stretch personally, but I guess technically that would be correct.
Okay.
Because you're musing now. I'm bemused. I'm confused. I'm not able to muse.
Yes.
Okay. I can see that. Sure.
Yeah. That would be. I have not seen any others.
Well, talking about bemused, I was bemused the other day, and it got me. I was looking on Facebook page, and you know, we collect books and we sell books as well, my wife and I. And it was in the vintage, rare, and antiques books.
You mentioned this the other week.
Yeah. Oh, I did. I'm sorry. Yeah, we mentioned the person said acquired. I acquired a book at an auction. They never say I bought the book at an auction. This leads into something we were talking about, which is linguistic register. And that's the language varieties that are used in particular situations.
Mm.
And I bought a book and I acquired a book has, two different meanings. I acquired a book is like, yes, it's an expensive book. It's a more formal sounding way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a book, so I was like, yeah, I got a book the other day, a paperback, you know, that sort of thing. So we thought today we would discuss basically linguistic register.
I mean, it's really contextual. It's how you speak in a different situation to different people to make a different impression,
mm-hmm.
I would say. Wouldn't mm-hmm. you, Ross? Because it's really a lot of it is about the impression you're caring to make.
That's good. Because I was
a good way to say it.
I was thinking about how it might differ from, we've talked about code switching, where you talk in different groups in different ways. And that helps to differentiate it a little bit, I think, because you are thinking about the impression that you make.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they could also, someone said at one point, it's like the difference between legalese or motherese, which is like a really easy way to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're talking legally to your son, you know, to a kid, you know, like, you know, you should not, this is against this law, or a mother, hon, don't do that. You know, that's a different, completely different way of saying something.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get a little boring. I'm just going to give you background. It was, the term register was first used back in 1956, and it became more widely used through the 60s. And linguists wanted to distinguish variations in how you speak. According to the user, they were saying social background, geography, sex, age, then like the choices that they would make in terms of what they were saying to what different group, and so on and so forth. So this is where we get into the legalese versus motherese. Then in 67, this is when we got like more codified explanation of it. It was five registers this one linguist, Martin Jews, used. It was frozen, which is a language that's pretty much literally frozen. It doesn't change. And that was things like biblical verses, wedding vows, like, you know, do you so-and-so, you know, dearly beloved, we are gathered here. It's just the same. It has been the same. It continues to be the same. The next was formal. They do it at like a conference, news reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sermons, scholarly language. This is a very formal. It's kind of ossified, but not quite as much as the static.
And the next one, consultative, they had as like being less formal standard English. And I think this is where these distinctions get a little bit much.
I think so too, Ross. I was going to say that. Go ahead.
Yeah, because they're saying newscasting, employee to employer, seeking and offering advice. And in a way, it's a formal register, but it's a less formal register, but it's used in a situation where an expert is giving advice or recommendations to a novice. I think that's getting a little bit, you know, much.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into casual, which is language between friends, loose sentence structure, talking with vernaculars, etc. Slang is common. And then finally intimate, which, you know, we know intimate thought as well. I basically think, what do you think, Kathy? I think we're getting a little bit too much here.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's like, it's academic. I understand there's a need for this, but that's why I think most nowadays you don't have this extremely isolated examples to the same degree.
Yeah.
You really don't. Now, it's more, some people just say there's familiar, informal, formal, and ceremonial. Well, I did it backwards.
Or I like high, low, and neutral.
I think that's best, personally.
But the other way of doing is audience, purpose, medium, social rules. You know, what's your audience? What's the topic? What's the purpose? They're all getting... I think it's sort of like pornography. They said that legal definition, you know it when you hear it. Mm-hmm. I think you know
I
what
think you know when you see it was the thing with pornography.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I meant like, but we know register is when we hear it. Yeah. I think we kind of instantly sort of figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, we go back to what I said at the beginning. To me, I think to you too, Rose, well, to all of us, it's really all about context. It's really looking at language from a contextual angle, I think. I think it's that simple. Don't you?
Yes.
Because, I mean, any of us switch. I mean, I've never used that, what they were saying. What was it? The frozen, because I'm not, I don't officiate at weddings or anything. But, I mean, I do know that sometimes I speak more formally, like when I'm trying to impress someone, you know, than in regular life.
It's also interesting, though, I've noticed this a lot with many writers, and Kathy is very much that type of person. Switching registers suddenly is also really interesting. Because Kathy, you will do this. You'll be in a very formal situation, and then you'll burst out with some slang right in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And it's effective because it basically makes the person listen, and by changing the register, you basically really give impact to what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's very commonly done.
I think what bothers me with register is when it feels affected.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I give newscasts, I'll often edit the copy to be a little more casual. And that doesn't mean that I'm making it sound like I'm talking to my buddy, but I do want it to sound like I'm a person talking to people. And so I will almost always say, change the word purchase to bought.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would never say that something was purchased in my day-to-day life. And if I say bought, nobody's going to hear that and think, why didn't he say purchase?
Yeah,
but when you,
I agree with
you.
When
you do say purchase, it sounds a little bit like you're using an unnecessary word to sound more formal. And that doesn't feel like human and natural to me.
Mm-hmm. It's Ross's acquire, actually.
Yeah.
A funny way, purchase is to me.
To me, though, in that sense, the purchase and acquire in the book sense, when those people say it, I think in this case, the book is forcing them to say purchase or acquire, oddly enough. I think because it's a special book to them, they acquired the book. I think the same person will probably go, I bought the book. I bought like a paperback. But suddenly the book here has almost like a holy.
It's such a,
it's a special thing. So therefore, it kind of like, in that sense, I think it's really interesting because it like pops the register up. It pushes the register
I see what you're saying, actually. In effect, you're right. The book is leading the language, or the that particular purchase, if you will. That's interesting. I see that. I think you're right in a funny way.
And to some degree, when you get married, I would like to hear, dearly beloved, we are gathered here, or something like that. Okay, just hear me out, though. I mean, just theoretically. But rather than like a kind of an informal, like, hey, guys, we're here to get these two hitched up.
Uh-huh.
I can see where a lot of people would prefer the formal there, where the situation makes them want.
Okay, I see your point. I mean, we did not do that, but
neither
I understand that.
I got married in Hoboken. You remember that? With like
I got,
ceiling
we got married in our
down.
Front yard. So.
Yeah.
But I understand that because it gives a solemnity, if you will, or a weight. And so the situation dictates the language in that sense,
right,
too, because it's making it bigger and more, okay. But the funny thing is, as you said, the thing about switching in the middle of something, and the problem with misregistering, like, Fletcher, you were saying you want to make it more conversational. I would argue that if it was very, very, your copy was filled with purchases and acquired and whatever, it's off-putting. And I would say that's misregistering because your audience wants you to talk to them.
And I don't go so far as to like drop my G's you know, as I very much do when I'm talking to you guys or just in casual speech. I would never do that when I was reading a newscast, but I agree about those words. You know, it bugs the heck out of me when I hear a newscaster call somebody driving a car a motorist. Why?
Yeah, that reminds me when I was a kid, a friend of mine, Todd, I think we were 10 or 11, wanted to do a local newspaper for all the people on our block or whatever. And I'll never forget, he wrote like this little newspaper thing, and he had like, it was a snowstorm. He goes, "Youngsters were enjoying the snow." And I remember thinking, wow, he's like a real reporter. But he was clearly doing register. It was interesting.
Yeah,
he felt he had to be formal. See, but now what drives me crazy is also the opposite. I mean, we know jargon is obviously part of register. When you put in, like we've talked, we've lamented many times use of jargon and slang for that matter. But I mean, jargon's a good part of register. I mean, when you're talking to your colleagues or something, using the same terminology and stuff that you wouldn't use with others is part of the whole concept of register. But I would argue that when you overdo it, like we've talked about slang recently with, well, like we said, riz and all those things. The whole idea, when Ross, you and I have talked about when we were kids and dad, remember that in school, like teachers trying to go like, let's all rap now. And you'd be like, oh, good Lord, get me out of here. When's lunch? You know,
turns the chair around backward and.
Yes. Yeah. And that to me is misregistering again. They're trying so hard to talk to to the kids. It ends up defeating the purpose.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me on a historical note. I was reading George Orwell a while back, and during World War II, they would give like various writers they had give little talks on the radio to try to like, you know, gin up resistance and all of that. And he criticized C.S. Lewis, incidentally, the Narnia series. And he said granted, he fought in World War I, but he was very much in an academic milieu. Milieu, my God, I just said the speech. get me off the show. But he criticized C.S. Lewis because C.S. Lewis was talking to the people. And C.S. Lewis would say things, "Now listen, you chaps," and things like that, which I didn't know at the time. But Orwell said, no one says that. That's like... 1910 or 1920s. It's not what we speak now. And he criticized C.S. Lewis for deliberately trying to like lower the register, but doing so completely oblivious to what people were actually saying. Which is interesting. It's basically an historical example of what Kathy was just saying, which is interesting.
Well, it would be like right now someone's saying that's really groovy or something. Like
But that would be like, I mean, I think it'd be more like you said with Riz or something.
Yeah.
It would be someone, or maybe not. I don't know if Riz is in
it. No, it wouldn't be, because you were saying that that was...
You're right. It's older. You're someone who grew up in the 1960s, and you're trying to sound like you're current, and you're going groovy. Yeah.
Trying to lower your register without having any concept of what that level actually sounds like.
Right.
One thing that got me, just when we were talking about it, the whole concept, I'm just going to do this really briefly, of swearing, because that's part of register. I mean, like, you know, you swear with certain people and you don't with others. I mean, I am a little profane, but I mean, there are times and places where I would, you know, zip the old lip and not
throw
in. I am a lady sometimes. But what fascinated me was how swearing has changed. It used to be religion-based swear words, like no one could ever use. And now it's like not really a big deal. I mean, whereas racial slurs are now like the verboten language. So, I mean, certain things you can't use across the board now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That is really interesting about the swearing thing. I've been reading a book about sort of the history of swearing and learning that words, scatological terms or words for our body parts, were not necessarily so, I'm going to use the word obscene, but even though that has different meanings too through time, but we're not so obscene. Whereas I think a really, really horrible thing to say was God's bones or by God's bones.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which now people would, that's cutesy Shakespeare language or something, right? But but like that was, you did not say that, because it would apparently actually hurt God. Like, it would actually do damage to God when you said something like that.
Or he'd get really mad. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
There is also smiting that could happen. Yeah. I mean, and then what also got me with the whole concept of swearing was the this actually is getting to me now. Ross and I have talked about this. The whole concept of the blank word, the F word, then it became the R word, the N word. Mm-hmm. There became all these, the blank, whatever, fill in the blank word, which you all know what you're talking about.
But that always really, that's a little bit different than even in register. It always fascinated me because these words are so charged.
Yes.
That, I mean, it's really kind of weird because we all know what the F word is. We all know what the N-word is, but we're terrified of saying it. And, I mean, it's almost like we're phobic about it in a weird way, which, I mean, I'm not arguing we should start saying these words. I'm just saying it's really interesting how words have such power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely true. Yeah. And we don't, I mean, we rarely say F-word unless we are talking about the word. Right. Mm-hmm. We probably wouldn't slip that word into, you know, just.
We wouldn't say like F word you.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, maybe a little bit, but not really. I mean, we use those terms F word, R word, etc. when we are talking about those words and we want to talk about those words. But as you said, Ross, the power behind them is so much. And understandably, like Ross said, I'm definitely not saying that we should go around saying these words, but the power is so much that in order to talk about them, we use these initialisms or euphemisms for them, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just going to bring up Lenny Bruce, but I'm not going to bother. I mean,
yeah,
the other
sure,
thing
sure.
that gets...
Yeah, no, I mean...
Yeah, because I mean, look, Lenny Bruce's whole thing was to use the word. I'm a Lenny Bruce fan, so I actually am kind of on Lenny Bruce's camp where it's like, I think that we give the words so much power. I kind of think using them defangs them. But that's a very personal point of view. And it's a very touchy one, I know, for many people. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult one to talk about, actually, you know?
Yeah, it's even difficult to talk about that concept, you know, whether or not to use the words.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows, again, how powerful they are. And
they are. Mm-hmm.
They are sounds that come out of our mouths, but they have real power. They really, really do.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to steer us a little away and say, because we were talking about the F word and stuff. And what has been fascinating me at late, and I've talked about it with you and Fletcher, I'm sure you've noticed it, is the sanitizing swear words or other verboten words of whatever sort with asterisks.
Yeah.
So like you'll see it in social media. Yes. Someone will write F star CK.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I think we know what they're saying.
I know. Here. It's so strange to me.
Yeah, you too? Okay.
Yeah.
But Kat, tell Fletcher what you found. It was really interesting.
Okay, because initially it drove me crazy because I was like, well, if you're going to say, you're not fooling anyone.
Right.
You're saying that word.
Right.
You're just trying to make, you're sanitizing it, but you're not really because we all know what you're saying. And that is really annoying to me. It's like either don't use it or use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But now, more and more, the asterisk is being used because of algorithms. It's algo speak.
What?
This is really cool, Fletcher. You got to hear it. Go on, Kat. That's so interesting.
I've been outraged by the asterisks for many years, and Ross has had to listen to me complain. But more recently, it's because people online want their posts to not be hidden, shadow bans. They don't want to be reported for violating guidelines. So you're even seeing, I don't know if you've noticed, like you don't see kill anymore. You do see a new word, which is unalive, or, you know,
yeah,
have you seen that? People use unalive.
And it's for this reason? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because I thought that was just, you know, like a cutesy euphemism. It is not. It's algo speak. It's a way to cheat the algorithm.
Wow.
And I thought all this time it was people not wanting to say the word, but it's not.
It's basically if the algorithm sees that word in a post, it's going to make that post less seen by people, or maybe even flag you.
Correct.
Flag
or
you
even
for,
you might end up getting
banned
exactly.
for a little bit. So people want their posts to come through, and they're just using the asterisk. Oh, that's really interesting. And
isn't it?
New words, like you said, are cropping up because of that. Unalive instead of kill.
Unalive.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Because unalive, I actually thought was a really irritating, cutesy. I thought, like, you know, why are people doing this? I thought it was like some weird, But it's not. It's a legitimate, you know, a way to talk about something without getting pinged, you know. Or
I looked it up, though, and all of these firms claim they don't do this for kill and all of that. I don't believe it necessarily.
Yeah.
But they do claim that it doesn't make any difference. But the point really is, even if it doesn't make a difference to them, these words have now entered, these usages and words have entered the English language anyway. And people now see K asterisks LL and they're gonna write it, even if it doesn't make any difference. So we have no idea of knowing it because these guys don't tell us. So we just have to basically figure it out.
Well, I had always wondered, like, when people talked about porn, they would use a corn emoji. And again, I thought it was like some like stupid thing.
Yeah.
But it's not. Funnily enough, though, Rose, I looked it up too. And one thing I found was a lot of it is monetization. It's like if it limits your views, you don't make as much money.
Yeah.
So
I'm
a part
sure.
of it is like capitalism at work too. Yeah. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Follow the money. Follow the money.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because I must say, though, initially, though, the asterisk was, I have seen it, though, getting taken to the nth degree. I have seen literally chest was C-H asterisk T or something. But then I'm getting to, Ross, you remember when we did the very bad poetry book about the dreadful poetry written and how they would like do like the dashes for everything and you'd have to figure out what's the word?
Yeah, no, if it was an old book and if it was an old poem, we couldn't figure out the word because we didn't know that swear word in those days. So we're like, what does that mean
how
exactly?
How many letters?
I know. Although my favorite really though is if you get old books in Latin, Latin stuff or whatever, they're doing a lot of these guys like Catullus and all that were pretty obscene. And then they'll do the translation of like the poem and then they'll have like this huge big gloggy Latin section where all the obscenity occurs. As a kid I was like, what's going on here? And now I know I can read it.
We were just talking about asterisks, but I mean they've done that kind of concept to censor things in print to avoid, say, breaking obscenity laws, which is just what we're talking about with not wanting to get the algorithm mad at you.
Yeah.
I mean, in the it started, I think, in the mid-17th century. It was dashes.
Uh-huh.
Then it was asterisks started in the 19th century. So initially, you'd have, like, D-N. I mean, but you could figure, just like now with the asterisk, you could figure it out. I mean, you'd look at it, you go, okay, they're cutting out two letters. The first is D and the last is N. Oh, what could it be? You know?
The one thing I do want to interrupt here, Kathy, is I'm really proud of you for pronouncing asterisk correctly. For years, Kathy, she knows how it's spelled. She knows how it's pronounced. But she, for years, she would get asterisk confused with Asterix, the cartoon character. And we would be in a...
I loved Asterix.
And we would be at a meeting, and she'd go, Asterix.
And I'm like, oh, no.
If I recall, you would kick me sometimes, Ross.
I'm not saying she didn't know the pronunciation, but she would always do it. And then remember that one day you kept saying it over and over, and then you...
What was I talking about? Why was I saying it so often? I do remember that.
I know. It was just like... And we put that in our book, actually, asterisk, how to pronounce it, because of Kathy, mostly.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about writing words and, you know, not actually writing the entire word out. I know some people, for example, won't write the word God, put G-D. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder, does some of that go all the way back to uttering
words? Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, or swear words in the sense of religious words that we can't say, like, because it will actually create some damage in the
cosmology.
Words
of power in effect.
And so, like, you also can't write them because writing them will evoke something in the world. And so, like, yes, we know what they are, but if you actually do write that word out, then some damage is inflicted upon the world. Like people used to believe that. And it is actually true now, because if we say some words out loud, some damage is done to people with certain words, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if that whole idea of writing dashes in there has some basis in that same sort of thing. It's not just to get around an obscenity law, but maybe that obscenity law is there because the understanding is that that word will do actual damage if it is written
out. Spoken.
Yeah, we're
spoken. Well, it's the power of the word. I mean, I think in Hebrew, ancient Hebrew, I don't know, but I think Hashem would be the name in ancient Hebrew. And you would say that the name obviously is God, but you wouldn't say God, you'd say Hashem.
Right, the
because
name, yeah.
Because God is invoking something very powerful, the word, so you don't want to use the word all the time, I think. I think that's probably fairly common in those days, because you would, the word has real power.
And it's what you said. I mean, writing it with the line means that, because say if the, you've written it on a piece of paper and that paper is destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You've destroyed, you're destroying the name of God in this case.
Yeah.
So yes, I mean, this is like, you know, this is huge. This is desecration,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
So this whole conversation is really interesting. As we've talked about register, we've also kind of evolved into a discussion of the power of words
absolutely.
In language.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
And it's really interesting. And formal, you know, register has power. Casual register basically carries a little bit less power in terms of the use of the words. But as soon as we get to stuff that really, really matters, we switch up a lot. That's interesting.
Although I would argue that very informal is power in a different way. Because
right.
you're saying, you're my cohort. You're part
you're right.
of my group.
You're right,
Kat.
Yeah. As I said that, I thought, uh-oh. Low intimate has power in a different way.
Yeah.
Power
big
relations
time.
Vary. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because I mean, an informal power structure is not the same as a formal one. It's like, not I'm on top, but we're in this together. I've made you my group, you know what I mean? And I'm part of you too now. You know, we're all...
No, if I go like my darling to, you know, the average person on the street, I'm going to get slapped in the face.
You know? It'd be interesting. We should try a test of this.
I think I'll avoid that one.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.